when you look at these people that have these means and yet are using this aircraft and giving it back to do something for someone to help them in their time of need, like that to me is more what business aviation is really about. And that's why I think Angel Flight is so uniquely special.
Welcome to Hangar X Studios, where former fighter pilot and host John Ramstead takes us on a journey across aerospace as it enters an historic period of innovation and transformation. Our guests include aviation experts, pilots, financiers, military leaders, and innovators of all types. Buckle up for another episode of Hangar X.
Welcome to the Hangar X Daily Podcast, and this is where innovators and owners and operators and investors come to find the information that they need to make decisions that are shaping all of aerospace. And today, we are sponsored by Hangar X Daily. Hangar X Daily curates all of the information in aerospace, the thousands of articles that come out every day, and curates it down to the top 5 to 7 that you need to know and why as an investor or an executive or a leader. And you can go to hangarxdaily.com and sign up for free and get their newsletter. So with that, we're going to have a great conversation today because, you know, we've had a lot of conversations from drones to VTOLs to private jets. And you know what? And we have Emily Deaton on today from Jet Aviva. So, Emily, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Here's what we're going to dive into today is, you know, who really is buying, you know, private jets from small jets, midsize, the large jet, and, you know, is there a surge happening right now? What's causing the surge? And there's not a better voice or somebody that's more knowledgeable, in my opinion, than you, Emily. So I really appreciate you being here. So here's a couple topics we're going to cover today. So as everybody's listening is, first of all, what are first-time buyers doing? Are they going into charter or are they going into ownership first? We're also going to get into what are some of the demand signals that and what they really reveal, I think, about the broader health and direction of where aerospace is going, because I think there are some clear links there. And also, how does that customer experience drive value in aircraft transactions? So, you know, with that, Emily, let me I'm going to give a little of your background here for everybody. I tried to memorize it, but it's too awesome. So you're the CEO, right, of Jet Aviva,
yes,
largest private jet sales organization, one of them in the world by annual transaction volume. Strong focus on owner flight, light jets, turbine aircraft acquisition and sales. So I was looking at your website again this morning, by the way, and I was just drooling over the 18 different airplanes that I'd like to personally purchase, but we're working on that one. You joined Jet Aviva in 2019 as VP of Sales, then became COO in 2020, and then you, in 22, became CEO, and what you really did is help them transition through kind of a record growth phase. So really interested in talking to you about that part. You had leadership roles at Embraer, Executive Jets, and we've had the team from Embraer on. They're awesome. And you're also on boards including Angel Flight West, and I have a good friend of mine who's a volunteer pilot for them, and man, the work they do is incredible. So with your permission, I'd love to talk a little bit about Angel Flight. And because if people don't know about them, they should. And if you're an owner-operator, please sign up. And we're going to talk about the incredible impact that has. So you're also part of the Central Florida Business Aviation Association. And you just have a great background. So, you know, what I'd like to start out with, as you're talking to people, I want to talk about the first time buyer of a jet. What is that profile today? And have you seen a transformation or a transition over the last 5-10 years?
Yes, and it's a great question. First of all, thank you for the very kind introduction and the very kind words, especially about Jet Aviva. I'm really proud of our team and what we've had the opportunity to do. And so it's great to have the opportunity to speak with your listeners today. And I'm also really looking forward, as you said, to getting into the Angel Flight conversation. So thank you for providing a platform for that as well. So in regards to the first time buyer, this is an interesting segment of our industry and one that gets a ton of attention. This was a very hot topic of conversation back at my OEM days and remains a hot topic, especially in Jet Aviva, because we work with a lot of first-time buyers. As you can imagine, with the types of aircraft that we specialize in, we see a lot of people moving into their first whole aircraft purchase quite a bit here at the firm. So we spend a lot of time and energy profiling this population. What's interesting to me about the first-time buyer segment is that it has changed quite a bit since COVID. The pandemic really unlocked a lot more new entrants into our space. So pre-pandemic, I would say on average, most firms, whether new aircraft or used, would see about 10% of their transactions go to a first-time buyer. Immediately following the pandemic, that bumped to 30% annually, which for that segment, which had been stable for so long, this was a significant shift. And right around sort of that 2021 to 2022 timeframe, the big fear that we had as an industry was, are those buyers going to stay? What drove them here and are they going to remain? And so what's been very interesting to watch over the last few years is what has happened to those new entrants. So a couple of things here, you know, what led them to come in? Holistically speaking, and not to oversimplify, there are plenty of people around the world that can afford to benefit from business aviation. And I'm speaking more specifically about whole aircraft ownership, but across the business aviation industry, you have charter utilization, fractional utilization, whole aircraft utilization. And there are many people that can afford to take advantage of that, but many of them did not. And I think that it was mostly driven from, they don't really understand it, feels more expensive, some of those things. And so there was a hesitancy. The pandemic changed all of that, right? It really forced the issue and got people away from commercial aviation and into business aviation, primarily because of the safety and the security benefits and sort of the airlines weren't able to handle the travel capacity at the time. And this was a way to continue doing business. So then the question became, okay, well, they came. Are they going to stay? Are we going to see this huge fallout of people that got in too fast, weren't really educated sufficiently on the costs of being in the industry, of owning a whole aircraft for the first time?
You saw a 3x increase in entrance. That's a great question, right? Did that stay up at 30%, or where has it gone from there?
So what actually happened is the new entrants stayed. And that has been a huge lift on the industry overall. But that percentage of new entrants now has come back down. So what we saw was, we didn't see them fall back out. Huge win. Great benefit, right? But we have now seen a stabilization on that front. So now you're seeing kind of back into the 10 to 15% range of new entrants coming in annually. So, and I think that speaks a lot to what business aviation does for people. Right, really enabling them to have better work-life balance. We call it a time machine, get a lot of their lives back, have flexibility, and it's supporting their operations and it's enabling them to do work and life and all of these things, and they've stayed. So that's great. So what kinds of people are those? I mean, for us, we used to say this too. I feel like we said so many things and then the pandemic just changed the way that we look at the industry, but we used to say that the traditional path was, you know, charter, right? Start out chartering, get exposed, kind of get your dip your toe in the water, if you will, move into fractional, do that until the amount of time that you're flying hits a certain threshold where it's cost prohibitive, and then move into whole aircraft ownership, this sort of stepladder approach. We actually don't really see that anymore. What we now see, I would say, is almost a more savvy entrant where whether they decide to go charter, fractional, or whole really depends on what their mission requirements are. They have a really good understanding of the pros and cons within each one of those, and they're picking the best fit. So some may go into fractional and they may just stay there, that they may never leave. And that's great because that's a good solution for them. Others are doing a mixed composition, own a whole aircraft and supplement with charter or fractional for those missions that don't fit their whole aircraft. So we're seeing a lot more fluidity instead of this kind of traditional climbing approach. And I think that is one of the reasons that people are staying in the industry longer. They're not making a decision sort of in a reactionary way. They're doing it very thoughtfully. They're well counseled. They have great guidance around them. And as a result, they're putting together a really good ownership solution, and it's keeping them in the industry for a long time, which we love to see.
So are there people that buy a whole aircraft? Because we've actually been looking at, you know, that this year. But then if it's underutilized, we could charter it out. I mean, how do new owners think about that, and how would you even manage that?
Yeah, so we hear that a lot. I would say that's a great solution for a lot of people, and you see it all the time, right? Charter management in our industry as a way to offset some of your operating cost or just make sure that the aircraft is sort of being properly utilized, so to speak. It's a great solution. This was one of the fears that we had during the pandemic was, were people buying airplanes thinking that they were going to have so much charter activity that it would cover their operating costs or even turn a profit, and then realizing that that perhaps is not true, and then they were selling and getting out. So it's a cautionary tale, right? Yes, that's a great solution. It can work really well for people. But you need to be very realistic and work very closely with a good qualified charter management company and make sure you really understand what that cost offset is going to look like before you make a decision on purchasing an airplane because you think you're going to cover it with all of your charter revenue. So, and we've seen both sides of that, right? We've seen that go really well. And we've also seen people that it didn't work out the way that they envisioned. So I would say yes, but proceed with caution.
And I would guess that also affects your flexibility to use the airplane then too, correct?
Yes, it does. I mean, depending on how you set that up with the company, and there's a lot of flexibility in that, right? So some firms, charter companies, want to work with you only if you're basically going to give them carte blanche on the airplane. Others, you can have a lot more of a narrow window. And I mean, I think of it like this, right? It's funny because we use real estate examples a lot in our industry to help people wrap their brain around how this works. But think of it like having an Airbnb. Like the more you have it on the market, the more you can potentially monetize it, but then the less chance that you get to use it, right? So there's a balance there, right? And I think you just have to set up the structure that works the best for you.
Yeah. Now, question for you. Now, I've been type rated, and it's a lot of work. It's a lot of study. It's a lot of time in the simulator. And your founders got type rated in everything that has a type rating that you sell. Now, that's a commitment. And can you tell me what's behind that? I mean, that's kind of all in.
Yeah. I mean, thankfully we've sort of changed that a little bit over time to not quite burden our sales team so much, but, the rationale behind that is pretty straightforward, right? We want to specialize in the aircraft that we represent. So what we have done at Jet Aviva now, and really based off of this foundation that was started by our co-founders, is I don't want to have a sales team that is sort of a jack of all trades and master of none, right? And that was really exemplified by why they went out and got type rated in those aircraft early on. They knew them better than anyone else in the industry. They could talk to the pilots. They could work the transaction. They understood the OEM. They knew how to take delivery of those aircraft. Like, they really had detailed expertise specific to that make model. And you don't really see that across the industry. You see a lot of, I'm an expert in the transaction and I can buy and sell anything. And so we've really taken that to heart. So now on the Jet Aviva team across our organization, which is quite a bit larger now, each one of my sales team members specializes in a few aircraft. And their goal is to know those makes and models better than anybody else. And that's everything from service to the way they transact, to the market, to the airframe itself. So highly specialized, which we think enables us to serve clients that are interested in those airframes better than our competition, if you will.
Yeah, and so I can't just walk out on the lot and the one same person can sell me anything there. I'm going to work with somebody who's a specialist. Yep.
Yeah, so we balance that a little bit too. So one of the things that the Jet Aviva team does that's a little bit different is we team sell. So for example, let's say I'm your salesperson. You get to know, I don't sell, but this is a hypothetical.
Well, yeah, let's just say I walk on going, you know what? I'd like a Phenom 100. A 300 would be better, but it's a very different price point. But, you know, we're a small, fast-growing company, so we want to have that flexibility. So maybe use that as somebody walking on thinking that.
Right. So let's say I'm the first person you get to meet, right? And let's say that I specialize in Citation Mustangs, but you want to look at the Phenom 100 and then eventually a 300. It's a great example, right? We see this quite a bit. So you will work with me because I have the relationship with you, and that's always where we start. To us, the relationship is of the utmost importance, but then we want to make sure you get that specialization. So I'm your main point of contact, but I'm going to bring in my Phenom 100 specialist into that conversation, and we're both going to support that deal. So you get all the expertise and you get the person that you have the relationship with. And even as you move up, right, let's say you go Phenom 100 to Phenom 300 and then you jump to a Challenger 350, I'm still your main point of contact, and you're bringing in the specialist on that team throughout all of those different transactions. So you get the best of both worlds. And then on the back end, we handle all of the team dynamics, but for you, we make sure the client's getting what they need and they're getting the expertise regardless of what they transact.
Yeah, because that, you know, the first time you're buying something, there's so many questions, you do so much research, but having somebody who's an expert is so helpful. But, you know, being in business for the last 30 years, though, I got to ask you a business question, though, too, Emily. You stepped in as COO to a jet brokerage company right as the pandemic was starting. So everything got turned upside down, and then you led through what turned into some record growth. But here's my question is, what did you learn either about business or your team or the markets going through all of that adversity and, you know, some of the resilience you had to build that you're still using today? Because a lot of things have gone back to normal, but we also try to take the things that we learned and then apply them to what we're doing now.
It's a great question. And, you know, honestly, as I look at every single calendar year, post-pandemic, we rolled right into a year of what we would call stabilization, which was 2023. Then we had an election year, which are notoriously challenging for business aircraft transactions. And then we had last year, which was very exciting with the onset of tariffs, right? So we've never, since I've been at the helm, we have not had stability effectively.
Yeah.
And I think that is inherently the lesson, right? If you are waiting for things to settle down or things to normalize or a period of stability in order to feel as though you have your organization under control, you're never going to be in control because something is always going to change. So to me, I think the biggest lesson we've learned is how important having a really solid foundation of the way that we do business and being true to that, regardless of external variables and ups and downs in the market, is what has enabled us to grow despite all of these ups and downs. Like, there were tremendous ups, right? Like, we had great years of market activity, but then it was a few years to recover from that. And now, did we build an organization that can run and sustain itself in good times and in challenging times? And there's a lot that goes into that. I think there is operating principles related to how you invest, how much you invest, where you invest, right? I mean, you want to invest in your business, but you also don't want to get too fat to where things get lean and you're in a position to not be successful. There's cultural principles to that. Salespeople drive our business. It's a very hard job. Are you creating an environment where they want to be, they're enabled to be successful, and you're benefiting them and enabling them to grow over time? And can they make it in a tight market or a good market? And I think, you know, those foundational principles to me are what are so important, because the one thing that has been consistent since I've been here is that the market has not been the same every single year. So we've had to be the stable thing while the market changes. And I think that that's a great principle just in all business, but also in life, frankly, right? Like, if you don't have a good foundation from which to work from, then you're always going to feel unsettled.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of where the market's going, right, you're, you know, Jet Aviva starting to step into some larger size cabins that you didn't traditionally have. And, you know, what is the market signaling, both, I think, from, you know, the platforms that are available to purchase, but also the buyers? Are they, individuals, businesses, government. I'd love your what you're seeing yourself, and what do you think? What do you think this is messaging to the aviation in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would say the one thing that we have seen consistently is the reason we moved into the larger cabin markets. I mean, at its core, it offers great opportunity for any firm. We didn't move into that space until our clients really demanded it. I mean, our business has been in place for 20 years. We've been working with our clients for a long time. About half of our business every single year is to repeat clients. So people come back. They want to do business with us again and again. And over time, they've come into this industry and they've remained in it and they've upgraded their operation. And this is all kinds of businesses, right? This was the guy that maybe started out owning a Citation Mustang to help with his business. And now he's buying a ultra long range aircraft because his business has grown, his fleet needs have expanded, he's doing business internationally, whatever the cause may be, right? And so we were consistently finding ourselves doing these transactions, which means in order to do it in the Genevieve way, we had specialists on the team. We wanted to be able to know those markets as well as anyone else. And so we're like, well, we're doing it. We might as well tell people. So that was more of the move was we have this capacity, we have this specialization, and now we're really going to go to market with it. But we, like I said before, we built our foundation. We put the right experts on the team, and then we did the marketing. We didn't do it the other way around. In terms of buyers, I mean, I think the market is signaling that it is healthy, right? I think businesses have found, regardless of market dynamics, that business aviation is a tool that enables them to be successful. That's especially true in the super mid and large cabin markets. And it doesn't feel optional. I think these firms have gotten accustomed to this. They need this in order to operate their business the way they've been operating. And so this is really just a question of fleet replacement strategy, mission fit, you know, and kind of consistently cycling through. So for us to be able to serve our clients in that space when they're going to be using these aircraft for a long time, it's a great place for us to be.
And I had another question as you're talking is first time buyers, what percent are single pilot? Like I could be a single pilot and I'm always curious, am I in the minority if I was going to buy an airplane and fly it myself or?
Well, I mean, it's tricky to say. I think if you look at, because there's the Jet Aviva answer where the majority of our clients in general at this firm are owner flown, right? So a lot of first-time buyers would be in that owner pilot category. But in fact, if you look at the overall fleet comparatively and the number of transactions that we do, yeah, no, you would not be in the minority for being a owner and a pilot. That is still very common, but it's certainly more common at the lighter end of the market. Right. So in the Citation space, the Phenoms, for example, the turboprop categories, you're still going to see a lot of owner flown aircraft there. And there's a ton of organizations that speak to that community as well. I mean, look at the Embraer Jet Owners Association, the Citation Jet Pilots Association. These entities exist because they're great community around being an owner pilot in this industry. What you do also see, though, and I think it's important to mention, is we see first-time buyers, not necessarily owner pilots, but we do see first-time buyers entering the market in the super mid and large cabin categories. So again, like it's not a rule that you have to start with a smaller jet and then move your way up. Very much it's mission fit based. What is it that has brought you to the table? What is your need? And then how do we fill that need? And that may be a bigger airplane right out of the kick.
Yeah, right out of the kick. If somebody's considering buying that first airplane, what are some of the critical questions they should probably be asking themselves as they're starting to think about, should I get my own airplane or not?
Yeah, you know, I hate to say this because this is not the exciting answer. As much as I would love to say, like, spend all your time looking at airplanes and pretty pictures of them on the internet and really decide what airplane you want, I don't want you to do that. I don't. I want you to start with, like, tax. That's where I want you to start. These sort of entity formation, ownership structure, tax counsel are going to be some of the biggest value drivers in owning an aircraft. And it's not the most fun place to start, but I promise you the entire process will be far more enjoyable if you get those things figured out early, so that when you start looking at airplanes, you can focus on the airplane stuff. It's very hard to, here's what I don't want to see. First time buyer, super excited, finally decided to pull this lever, gets excited about an aircraft, didn't do the kind of business groundwork, nitty gritty stuff over here, and then becomes emotionally attached to an aircraft that they can't really make sense to own and operate. Or they get footed with some crazy tax bill that they didn't see coming. And then the whole experience just becomes negative and stressful. And that's not what we want, right? So we want you to get all of the nuts and bolts out of the way, and then we can focus on the fun part. We can go flying and we can look at airplanes and we can get you into the perfect aircraft for your needs. So that's where I would start. And I would also say, like, there are experts and specialists in this stuff for a reason.
Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you that. Where does somebody find somebody with a, you know, tax background in private jet ownership, or, you know, an attorney on entity formation around this? Does it fit into your current structure? Should it be separate? You're right. These are great questions, but not everyday practice for a lot of professionals.
Right. So I'm going to give you, your listeners, kind of the best place to start. So in my opinion, the best place to start is go to the International Aircraft Dealers Association website, IATA.aero, and click on the member list. And every member in there is accredited. They've been vetted. They're certified. So these are people that specialize in aviation. They specialize in aircraft transactions. And you've got everything from tax, legal, lending, brokers, and all of them are qualified, vetted, and specialized. It's the absolute best place to start if you're not sure. And frankly, I'd recommend anybody on that list, because that list, we as an industry, and once you're a member, we all work together all the time. This is a great place to start. It can be overwhelming, and yet it's a great resource for you. Like, go to IATA. I mean, call a few like you would with anything, right? Shop a couple. Almost all of them will offer you 30-minute exploratory conversation, and then pick the one that you think makes, you know, fits your personality, frankly, the best. They're all qualified. But get those specialists on your team. That's where you should start.
Okay, great advice. And now I really want to get into something I'm very interested in, is Angel Flight. And first of all, how did you personally get interested in that, Emily?
So Genevieve has a long history with Angel Flight. And Angel Flight is an organization that has different organizations across the country. So I support Angel Flight West, but there's an Angel Flight Central, there's an Angel Flight South Central. So if you're learning about Angel Flight, there's more than one. We all do a similar mission. Genevieve, in fact, our co-founders volunteered for Angel Flight back when they were teenagers at the Santa Monica Airport doing mission assist work. So we've known of and had a great relationship with the organization for many years. Angel Flight, thinking its 42nd year of operation. I personally got involved a few years ago, and their executive director reached out to me and said, hey, you know, we could use some support. We're looking at doing some things on the board. We've got some stuff coming up within the organization. Are you interested in maybe lending your time? And one of the things that I'm always very big on is giving of your time. And so I said yes. And it has been the most fulfilling work I've ever done. My kids like to joke, like, why do you have these free jobs? Because but I love it. And I'm the people are so passionate. The staff is incredible. The board is amazing. I've learned so much from my fellow board members, but really it's about the mission and the patients and doing the work that we do, which if you're not familiar with Angel Flight, we provide free transportation to healthcare. So most commonly we'll see a mission where someone is in a more rural area and they need to get to a specialized care facility in an urban area. And so our volunteer pilots will, free of charge, at their cost of the aircraft and everything, they will go pick up the patient and bring them to that urban area. And then we have a team of what we call Earth Angels that will actually volunteer their time to drive them from the airport to the hotel directly. So we're covering your transportation end to end to make sure that people can get access to the care that they need. And I think what's so amazing to me about this is typically a really stressful and difficult time of people's lives. They're facing a challenge. They're needing treatment for themselves or for their family members. And to be able to have this burden taken off of them, but also to be able to do it by flying in a small private airplane, you're providing a little bit of hope and a little bit of positivity at a really negative time. And so I love that our team facilitates this, and I love that our volunteers give so generously to enable this to happen. And I think I especially love it because business aviation sometimes gets a bad rap, right? Like, it's just rich people and their private jets, and they're living this super luxurious, affluent lifestyle. And when you look at these people that have these means and yet are using this aircraft and giving it back to do something for someone to help them in their time of need, like, that to me is more what business aviation is really about. And that's why I think Angel Flight is so uniquely special.
Yeah, you know, a good friend of mine, he has a Phenom 100. And he loves volunteering for LifeFlight, but he actually flew up from Florida up to South Carolina. There was a veteran who'd had his right leg was missing at the knee, but the left leg was completely shattered. And so there was, and they'd done a lot of surgical repair. But anyway, there's evidently a surgeon here in Denver that specializes in exactly what this guy needed. He already had many other surgeries, so he was excited about it. But imagine in that condition trying to get through an airport, through security, into an economy seat and over here. And Brad flew him out here with his wife and his kids and his father. So they all got to fly together. And then somebody volunteered to put him up. And it was turned out to be a very successful surgery. And then Brad wanted to make sure when they were ready to go back, he wanted to be the guy to bring them back so he could just – and now he's been staying in touch with that family. And – I got to tell you, he gets so much – I think he likes his Angel Flights that he does in his plane as much more than anything else he gets to do with that aircraft.
I hear that type of story a lot, and I would encourage anyone that's thinking about doing it. Like, first of all, these organizations want to work with you. So don't feel overwhelmed. Like, oh, I can't give that much time, or I don't have that much – you know, ability to do, like, one flight makes a difference.
And what kind of airplanes are they looking for? Jets, turboprops, Cessna, Bonanza? Like, what are they looking for?
I mean, so here's the interesting thing. I mean, Angel Flight specifically, most of our owners are in that sort of higher-end piston, turboprop, light jet space, right? So, you know, we got Cessna 182s, I think, make up the biggest number of our Angel Flight owner operators, but we've got CJ3 owners as well. So we kind of run the spectrum there. But there are lots of volunteer flying organizations. There's Veterans Airlift Command. There's, yep, Corporate Angel Network. There's Patient Airlift Services. There's ones for pets. There's tons. So, and if you're not sure where to start there, most of these volunteer flying organizations can connect you with each other. Call one of them. Tell them what you are interested in doing, and they can help get you in touch. We do try to support each other and work together. So, you know, let's say you're not a good fit for Angel Flight for whatever reason. There is probably another charitable flying organization that would be a great fit for you. So definitely worth reaching out.
And who's eligible to, like, apply to be transported? I actually don't know much about that side of it.
So on the Angel Flight side specifically, we need you to be ambulatory, right? So these aircraft, we need you to be able to get into the aircraft on your own. Now, that's specific to Angel Flight. There are benefit flying organizations where you may have, they have different capacities, right? So they're all a little bit different. But for Angel Flight specifically, we really just need you to be kind of able to get there on your own two feet, because these aircraft are not medically equipped, right? So that's really the main thing. But when you reach out, and you start the process, they'll just ask you a couple of very easy screening questions to make sure that we can support you. And then the rest they take care of from there.
Man, I love it. Thank you for sharing that, Emily. And folks, if you check in, you decide to fly or be flown by Angel Flight or any of the organizations Emily did, will you please drop us a note? Let us know. We'd love to hear your experiences. And, you know, we love to promote not only aviation, but people being generous and, you know, supporting great causes through aviation. We do that ourselves as an organization through the Young Eagles program here in Centennial. That's where I do some volunteering. And I got to look into flying with my Cirrus as an Angel Flight pilot.
Ah, yes. Look at me. I'm recruiting right now on this podcast. Yes, do one flight. You won't regret it.
Do you cover Colorado? You are Angel Flight West.
Yep, Colorado is one of our states. We have an amazing wing in Colorado area. They're a great team. We actually do a 5K fundraiser in Denver area. So we have lots of ways to get you involved. So we'd love to have you and your Cirrus for sure.
Do I have to run to be a pilot? Because I run only when chased, Emily, just so you know.
Yeah. Okay. No running required.
Okay. No. Well, man, this has been awesome. Love to have you back on. Just as we wrap up, you know, we covered a number of different things, but what would you like to just leave the audience with? What's on your heart?
Man, really, I would say, I think there's so many amazing things to talk about when it comes to aviation, especially if you're a first-time buyer, you're thinking about getting involved, or you're thinking about getting involved with something like Angel Flight, or you're thinking about selling your airplane for the first time, you've never used a broker before. I mean, this industry really is people that love to talk about what we do. We do. So to me, in this day and age of online research and ChatGPT and all of the things, have a conversation. Like, we'd love to talk to you. We'd love to have people reach out. We are happy to chat. If it never turns into anything, that is okay. I'm honestly, like, we want to be a resource for people that love aviation like we do, whether it's on the charitable flying side or a question about the International Aircraft Dealers Association, or you want to talk about the market, give us a call. That's what makes this industry, in my opinion, so special, is it's really about the people and it's really about the relationships. And so the best way to do that is to give us a call.
You know, yes. And I want to put an exclamation point on that. You know, being in aviation for 40 years, it's like, it's some of the finest people I know, just their character, how they think, how they prepare, how they care about people. So that's probably why I've stayed in aerospace for so long. But thank you for coming on. Keep knocking them alive at what you're doing there at Jet Aviva. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. It was great. Really appreciate it. Happy to be here.